great. Beauty.
Hello, and welcome to a very special edition of Third Degree Burn. This is a podcast that takes a look at Alpha Flight, the great Canadian series that John Byrne was creator, artist, writer, and the auteur for this series that ran about 28 issues before it abruptly ended when he left. Wow, I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. We are up to we're really getting into high gear here as we have a couple of issues to share with you tonight. I believe we're doing issues 9 and 10, which form a two-part story, and the backup stories that are looking at the individual members of Alpha Flight as well. I'm joined on the podcast by a couple of our normal hosts here. We're going to start by introducing Tim Elliott.
Hello.
Hello.
And we have Nigel Sving.
Hello there.
And I'm sitting here in Athens, Ohio, acting as your host. We were hoping to get a couple other guys on, but one or the other things got in the way. So you've got the three of us now. We'll see if somebody else pops in a little bit later on. As I mentioned, this is a two-part series, and I believe, or a two-part story, and it concentrates generally on Sasquatch. And I have to tell you, as I was pre-reading before this episode, I was struck by some of the parallels that I had forgotten over the last 20 to 30 since last I read this, of how the story is somewhat reminiscent of a movie that came out, John Carpenter's The Thing. However, I'm not the presenter tonight, and so I'm going to let the presenter or the presenters go ahead and tell you their interpretation. And we're going to start with 9, and I believe, Nigel, you have the honors, right?
That's right, Kirk. Yeah. We're going to have a look at issue number 9 first, of course. Do it in the right order. And let's have a look then. So it was Alpha Flight 9. And that had a cover date of the 9th of April, 1984. I believe, let me just... the release date for that was January the 17th, 1984. Before I get into more details on that one, just to give you some information about other things that were published on that date, which included John Byrne. So as well as Alpha Flight 9... he was involved with the Doctor Strange Classics number 2. I think he did the cover on that one, as he had done with the previous issue. Fantastic Four number 265. He was the writer and artist on that one. That was the house that Reed built. And that also included the return from... the Secret Wars in that one, I believe. Phoenix number 1, which I think it's called The Fate of the Phoenix. It was the special that they put out with the reprint of X-Men 137, but given the alternate original ending.
The unreleased story to it.
Yeah, yeah. So that came out in that month as well. Power Man and Iron Fist 104. I think he did the cover maybe on that one. And The Thing, number 10, because he was writing The Thing's own title at that time. So a lot of crossovers with The Thing in one way or another at the moment going on. Okay, but let's just go back then to our issue here. So, the team that worked on this was, as usual, writer, penciler, and inker is John Byrne. And on the front page of this, he's written as the project director. Andy Yanchus was the colorist, who's referred to here as the spectrography. The letterer was Michael Higgins. who is given signals here. Denny O'Neill and Linda Grant were the editors. And on the front page of this issue, he's classed as the project manager. And of course, Jim Shooter was the editor in chief. And on the front page of this issue, it says he was the one who's funding it. So they were just having a bit of fun with the details there. And the title of this issue is called Things Aren't Always What They Seem. And how's that for a double meaning? Okay, so let's have a look at the basic plot. Walter Lankowski and a handful of other researchers analyze a bizarre radiation pattern being picked up at an isolated research station in the snowy Rocky Mountains. Activating a modified satellite dish teleports in the unconscious body of someone who appears to be Ben Grimm, the Thing. Sasquatch decides to reveal his secret identity to the other researchers in order to carry the heavy superhero into the infirmary. Not long after, a commotion draws the staff to the infirmary, where they discover that the Thing has disappeared and the doctor has been immolated, with evidence of other powers used in order to escape the room. At first, they think other Fantastic Four members have come to abduct the Thing, and Walter heads out into the snow to track them. However, he realizes too late that the powers involved were all in one individual. Before he can return, a Nova Blast back at the lab kills the rest of his colleagues and destroys the laboratory. Walter gets back to the smoldering wreckage to confront the true culprit, the one that had taken the form of the Thing to protect himself on re-entry from space, the Super Skrull. And the cliffhanger is where we are left for this issue.
Dum, dum, dum.
That's a great cliffhanger, yeah. And this is just a cracking story. And it kicks it to high gear in the next issue. Yeah, but
as Kirk said, this part especially is based on John Carpenter's The Thing.
Very much so, yeah.
In the way it unfolds and the setup, the situation, yeah. Now, the second part of this issue, because we're not over yet, is again looking at sort of the past histories, if you like, or the origins of some of the other Alpha Flight members, and it's the turn of Aurora. And this first part of the story is called A Stranger in My Mirror. And it goes into some of the back details. And it starts with, at 13 years old, Jean Marie Bourbier discovers her ability to fly during a suicide attempt, jumping from the roof of her school. At first, this lightens her heart, but relating the event to her headmistress only earns her punishment for blasphemy. In her mounting depression, a more rebellious and outgoing alternate personality begins to form. 5 years later, when Jean earns a spot on the teaching staff at the school and she gets her own bedroom, allowing her more freedom, she ends up giving up control to her other self, enough for her to head out to a nightclub and afterwards uses her powers to fend off some muggers. This altercation is witnessed by a passerby, Wolverine, who helps her out and later, over coffee, offers her a chance to get a job with Department H. So again, that's how she is discovered and invited to join what would become Alpha Flight.
I like it.
And that wraps up that issue. But it's a nice issue, this one. I like it. Yeah, it's good.
It is.
I enjoyed reading both the main story and the little origin of Aurora. This is where I started to take a shine to Aurora.
Which I think they, I haven't read Alpha Flight in so long, but they don't really follow up on that much later. I mean, the her kind of split personality. I think he kind of dissolves or it just goes away. They don't really do, maybe it's after he left the book. They don't deal with it anymore,
More. Yeah.
So they could have really, there's a lot there you could dig into and really kind of, especially since you know, we're kind of starting to spit the end story first, but the fact that she is going to commit suicide, she's going to throw herself off this building. And that's how she discovers she can fly.
Tragic star.
And then, of course, she's dealing with the sisters that are, you know, react quite harshly to her. It's very much like the, you know what the Magdalene schools are? The ones they used to have in Ireland?
No.
They were the Magdalene, Magdalene laundries. And they were schools run by the Catholic Church took in, like, single moms and, you know, what would they call wayward women.
Yeah.
And they were not treated.
Waifs and strays. And
exactly. Yeah, and they were not treated very nice at all. They were mistreated and abused and beaten. Yeah. So
maybe a little bit like an old workhouse. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
going back. Yeah. And so, yeah, what do you think of the cover? Going back to the beginning here, the covers, I really like the cover.
It's a nice little fake out. The thing's hand.
You got the thing's arm and hand there, so suggesting that the thing is going to be in this. And Sasquatch holding one of the bodies of the murdered scientists.
Yeah, I was going to ask, who is this that he's holding?
But it
is that
be
just a nameless figure?
I think it's just a generic
supposed to be
person.
One of the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, it could be any one of those. Well, not anyone, but it could be one of three of those males that are in that same facility.
Is it a male? It looks
assumed it was a male.
Yeah.
I don't see any, breasts, but... but it's just, I think for the cover, it's just a generic.
Yeah,
okay. Right. And, it's just a, because he might not have known when he drew the cover who was going to.
Yeah.
Because Meg is the only, I think Meg's the only female.
Only female.
At the station.
Right. Yeah.
And I think her death is kind of horrific because she is obviously the half of her face is just looks charred. And then she dies really quickly.
I thought this was going to go someplace with that injury and her. It doesn't, but I thought this was going to, she was going to lead to something that maybe she wasn't really dead, that maybe, you know, that she was going to become another character, continuing character, or perhaps this was going to be Nemesis.
This is almost completely devoid of the two stories we discovered previously. It's a standalone Sasquatch story, except it has the Super Skrull. And this is, and he does, you know, Kirk, remember when the Super Skrull showed up in Namor?
Yes.
Byrne did the same thing. He did a lot of hints at who it might be. And once we found out who it was, we went back and we saw those hints that it was the Super Skrull. So he kind of does the same thing here. When the doctor is killed, you see the shadow of obviously Reed's arm. And then,
Reed's arm,
you see a little bit of purple costume. And then, you know, they of course, Lukowski is, he goes off on his own. He finds all these clues. And then it dawns on him. It's like, oh, it's like almost like I'm fighting the Fantastic Four. And he realizes who it is. And then that's when the station blows up.
It's too late. Killed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And earlier on in the story where he mentions about the thing beaming down from another planet.
Yeah.
And the guy says, how do you know that? And he says he'd just be returned from a consultation with the FF in New York. So he knows that the thing is off on the battle world,
right,
planet. And I think what he's referring to, although it doesn't actually say, it must be when Sue is in labor with the second child.
Right.
Which actually, that issue doesn't come through. That's the June cover date of the Fantastic Four issue. So this story actually comes out just before we get that issue.
And I think Byrne says that. It says, look at...
That's probably why it says, see current and upcoming issues. Of the FF, yeah. Rather than giving a number. Yeah.
And we've already... Actually, we've covered, at least I have, I've covered that on Storytime.
Yeah.
That's
that's a good issue.
The Doc issue. It is a good one, yeah. Mm. Which, I guess, I didn't think about that, but if you're a current reader, the Thing is off-world, and you see this, you're like, oh, he's back. You know,
yeah,
the Thing has come back to Earth.
It's a nice distraction. It's a red herring, but it works real well.
Yep. Except, one thing that you would notice if you were reading all these is when he was on Battleworld, he was wearing slightly different clothing. And here, he's back to his usual pants only.
His trunks, yeah.
And that's a kind of giveaway clue that it's maybe not Ben Grimm. Because he's wearing more like a wrestler's.
He's wearing pants. He's wearing like a. Yeah, he's got a sleeveless. It's kind of like a jumper kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what he had on in Battle World. So if it was him, he would be wearing that.
I didn't know what was coming in this issue when I bought it. I wasn't able to read it in the comic shop, but I took it with me to work, and on my lunch hour, I cracked the thing open and read it from front to back. And so he had me. I was right there thinking, oh, this is the return of Ben. He doesn't come back to, the Central Park. He doesn't come back with the FF, but this is how they're bringing him back to Earth. So I was right there. He had me hook, line, and sinker all the way up to the last page. When he's yelling, Walter is yelling in the flames and saying, I know you're here, monster, show yourself. I was like, what in the world is he talking about? I hadn't put it together. So the big reveal at the end, I went,
Well, it's like,
that really worked. It was like, I can't say enough about this particular issue in this story. It's just really good.
And we know what a Star Trek fan Byrne is. So it's like Gary Seven. He surmises that they plucked him like he was in a transport beam, and they grabbed him. That's why he showed up there. And even after he's gone, he speculates that somebody came in, killed the doctor, and took his body. He doesn't think that Ben got up and left on his own. It's not until much later when he starts seeing all the burn marks and the melted snow, when he talks about something must have been visible or stretch and that kind of thing. So he starts putting it all together. But,
I want to go back to the cover just for a second.
Yep.
For those who don't have it right in front of you, this is a pretty dark cover with a lot of shadows and crackling energy and in blue-black skies, since this is a polar region. And it's offset by a lot of orange. Orange for Sasquatch. And then also the wraparound swirl, nice composition here, also of the arm of the Thing that drops from behind the title, behind the masthead, down around the left. So the composition is somewhat a spiral that if your eye follows the arm around and then closes in on the body that Sasquatch is holding or cradling, for lack of a better term. I think it's very, very well laid out, very smart, and it sells before you ever open the issue. It sells the fact that this is the Thing. You recognize the scaly plates. You recognize the orange. So, you talk about the double entendre of the title. Things aren't always what they seem. There's at least three different meanings and interpretations that I can put on that title, which you'll note they did not put on the cover. I like covers that do not get word balloons, that do not have banners, that do not have clumsy titles. I like this.
Mm-hmm. And talking about the, I like the looking at the first splash page. I like the effect of how he creates the northern lights. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if it says
we have a northern lights alert right now in the Midwest due to a geomagnetic storm. It's I think it's receding if it's not over with now, but last couple of weeks we've been having a number of northern light alerts, for lack of a better term, saying this might be a good night to see, and we have clear skies tonight in the Midwest. So I'm going to run out there and take a look tonight to see if any super Skrulls are on their way back to Earth.
Well, we need to get Jeff Bezos to send you into space so you can get your cosmic powers.
Right.
Well, on this splash page you were talking about, Nigel, it says it's Mount Logan, which I looked up is an actual mountain. It's like the second highest mountain in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is it? It really exists?
Yeah, it's a real. But,
I thought it was just a play on Logan's name.
That's what I thought. Wolverine. But I wonder if Logan's name comes from
that.
Mount Logan. Mm,
probably.
But it's not part. What's funny is they call it as being part of the Rocky Mountains. It's not. It says it's part of the. Just had it. It's the St. Elias mountain range. And it's right next to the border to Alaska. So it's kind of in the corner of the Yukon. So I wonder if that's where Logan got his name. From that. But
speaking of Logan, what did you think of the appearance of Wolverine towards the end of Aurora's little story?
It was
I liked it.
We had established that he was, and Mac has said that Logan was always supposed to the team until he went to the X-Men. So I guess in this capacity, he's like recruiting. He somehow spots that there's something special about Jean Marie. So he decides to introduce her to Hudson. Yeah. And that's why I guess he gets started. And through that, that's how in the next issue, we find out that's how Northstar gets brought in. So
now when Aurora is, for lack of a better term, being assaulted in the alleyway or in the city side of town, the guy who's, there's a pair of guys, but the second one that assaults her, have we seen him before? Is he one of the, thugs back in the Puck episode? I mean, is this a repeating we're seeing, like Turk over in Daredevil? The thought just occurred to me. I'm gonna take out my other trade while we talk.
I think it's just a kind of thug face.
I think we've seen the face kind of thing before. Somebody very similar, but I don't think it's supposed to be the same one.
Yeah. Well, I will say this: is a little. A little dark. I mean, for at this time, a kid's comic. I mean, they talk about they want to rob her because they say she doesn't have a purse, and he says, "Well, let's grab her anyway. It'll be fun searching her." So they've got some.
They're
terrible
not good
things.
Guys.
They're not good guys. They've got some terrible ideas about what they want to do. And is the middle panel where the guy is falling back and they're being hit. Or would you assume this is that same kind of hit she did in the last issue where she punched the guy like 100 times in a split second?
Yep.
We don't see her arm moving, but I'm assuming that's the same idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get the... Yeah, when you just look at the picture and you can see him going backwards, going, and the way she stood, you think, what's happening? Is somebody invisible giving that guy a thump? But then when you read what Wolverine's thinking, then
he sees
you get
her.
It.
Yeah, he can tell what she did.
Yeah. He says, I bet that clown didn't even see the punch coming.
Nope.
Yeah. So she's using her speedy punch. Yeah.
going back one page earlier when she's in the discotheque or in the bar, the third panel on that page, it just, for some reason, it called to mind Dazzler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, with all discos the tend to do that.
Flashing lights. Yeah.
Call to mind Dazzler.
And it shows that she's, how naive she is, because she says to the guy who's like, he's dressed kind of like Travolta.
The Travolta guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Says, so you are a cancer. That must be painful. I'm sure it was, he said, I'm a cancer. What are you? Mm. And she just doesn't pick up on that.
So. Yeah. That must be painful for you.
Or I took it that she was flirting, that she did know, and that she's just playing with him. It doesn't fit. When you read the caption, she is supposed to be like, you know, she's learning the social rituals of modern man. My reaction was not that she was naive, but that she was flirting, that she was playing the dumb blonde, if you'll forgive the expression.
Yeah, yeah. Could be, yeah. Just,
I want to ask when she's, and I will say the scenes of her in the school with the nuns is pretty brutal too. You know, it's obviously,
yep,
she's getting beat, it looks like, by
a cane.
She's, yeah, but like a bamboo cane or something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then she's 5 years later, they've decided to offer her a job as a teacher, and they show her the room, where the other priest had Father Tyrell, and says, in fact, he died in that very bed right there.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand. Well, the backstory of him, is he significant? Is there a reason why we're being told so much about him?
I don't know.
I can't imagine that.
I don't remember. But because, well, she says that later that he was the one that was going to. Yeah, well, kindly, Father Tyrell, he was going to feed her, but the sister said, no, she can't eat. So he was, I guess maybe he was the only one that was nice to her.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to mention was that she says the lock and the door will, of course, be removed before you move in, meaning you're not allowed to have a locked door. And I don't know if that's so that you can't invite men up to your room, or you won't be tempted, or it's just reinforcing it just reinforces how harsh and rough this this school is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the page before, she says, I did not want you in this school from the beginning, Bobiere. You have the look of the devil about you. Now, I that didn't register when I first read it, but knowing that they have pointed ears and that they look a little pixie-ish, I think that's what they're trying to get across, and I would have thought that there more would have been made of that. If that sister doesn't like her that much, I can't see in 5 years that they offer her a position in the school. She wants her out, and if she's willing to beat her for it, I can't imagine that she would be offered. I mean,
well, maybe she thinks she can
whatever he wants, but
keep
an
eye on her. Yeah, I don't know.
Something's doesn't quite add up there, but. You know, for the tale and how it's going to unfold and put it together, it works for me. You know, it's not a big.
This is very similar to, if you've watched the TV show 1923, there is a storyline about how the church came in and tried to, I guess, quote, civilize the Native Americans, and they were being treated very badly. You know, it was I'm gonna beat the evil out of you, that kind of thing. So there was a lot of mistreatment going on there. So it sounds like, and I don't know if it's just Jean Marie, because the other girls seem okay. So maybe she's the only one that gets this kind of attention because they think there is something evil or
she transgresses. In their eyes. She goes out and plays the nightclub and becomes the harlot. So, you know, he doesn't spell it out that bluntly, but that's pretty clear. She's been missing for 3 days, and then she comes back with makeup on her, and it's like, what are the nuns to think?
Yeah.
So,
well, she's at this point still 13, so I hope she's just out wearing makeup and doing girl things. She's not, you know,
yeah.
you know, hitting the bars or hitting the clubs, that kind of thing. So.
I have a question about the sequence of this. You mentioned that in Namor, the Namor book, the Super Skrulls reveal, which I don't think we're spoiling anything now, that comes in the 90s, much later than this book, right?
Yes.
So this story occurs before that. Where does the story in Marvel Team-Up, where he gets trapped in the Van Allen belt, where does that fall?
That's before this.
Did Byrne write that one as well?
No, but he drew it.
Claremont wrote it.
Okay. So the sequence is he's trapped in the Van Allen belt. He comes back in this issue, wraps up in the next issue, not to spoil things here, but then how do we get to Namor?
Through Power Man and Iron Fist.
There is, and I covered this, I think, Kirk, when we covered Namor, because it gets convoluted. So after we cover the next issue, there's a website that kind of lays out what they did with the Super Skrull and how Byrne didn't like what they did, and he kind of retconned it. But I'll get into that after.
All right.
Are we ready to move on to 10?
Anything else to cover? Or have we done this pretty well?
I think we've done it. I'm ready to move on to 10.
Yeah.
Let's go.
All right. Issue number 10, where the action really heats up. Alpha Flight issue 10. Our writer, again, is John Byrne, as is the artist. Our colorer is still Andy Yankus. Letterer is Michael Higgins. Our editor is Denny O'Neill and Linda Grant. And Jim Shooter is our editor-in-chief. Cover date of May 1984 with an on-sale date of February 14th, 1984. 32 pages, 60 cents. His other works were, he's still doing the Doctor Strange Classics. Number 3, he did the cover art. Fantastic Four 266, he was writer-artist. Fantastic Four Special Edition number 1, Submariner versus the Human Race, which reprints FF Annual number 1 plus 5 new pages by John Byrne. Marvel Age number 14, which has a John Byrne interview, and he did the cover art. And The Thing number 11, he is still just the writer. Both these issues are, you can find in the Alpha Flight Classic Volume 1 or in the Alpha Flight by John Byrne Omnibus. Our first story is entitled Blood Battle. In New York, James Hudson prepares to move into a new apartment as part of his new job with Rocks and Oil. After signing a lease for his new apartment, he crosses paths with Steve Rogers as he exits the building. Each hero does not recognize each other, but Steve does feel he knows the Canadian. James changes into his civvies and flies off, wondering what the rest of Alpha Flight is up to. A wounded Walter Lankowski is running for his life from an enraged Super Skrull. The villain has decided to make sport of his kill in the isolated mountain wilderness. That was the site of the research station. The same research station that allowed the Skrull to return from space via a satellite dish. Dodging fireballs, the hero recalls the events of the past hours. Flashback. Lankowski was sent to the Cosmic Ray Research Station by the Ministry of Science to investigate a strange recurring signal from space. Using a boosted antenna, the scientists materialized Ben Grimm, the Thing, from thin air. Sasquatch carries the unconscious Fantastic Four member to the infirmary. Later, they found the doctor burned to death and the Thing body missing. Lankowski followed the footprints out into the snow when the station erupted in flames, revealing the Super Skrull. Lankowski broke his arm in the explosion as now is on the run for his life. Back to the present. Escaping from the Super Skrull, Lankowski hurls himself down a hill only to sink into the soft snow. In his human torch form, the Skrull searches the area, fearing the human has robbed him of his victory. Two large orange claws erupt from the snow and grab the flaming legs of the Skrull. The stress and pain of his broken arm causes Walter's transformation into Sasquatch be a much more savage version, and begins to overpower the Super Skrull. A fierce battle ensues as the two light up the night sky with the raw power of their fight. The Skrull is about to unleash his antimatter blast when he doubles over with pain. Sasquatch closes in when the Skrull uses his hypnotic powers to calm the beast. Sasquatch manages to avoid falling under complete dominance, but fakes it in order to wait for the right moment. The Skrull explains that he was previously beamed away from Earth and doesn't quite know how he ended up back here. See Marvel Team Up number 62. He intends to force Sasquatch to help him build a new transmitter device to help him escape. Sasquatch notices that all of the Skrull's time in the radiation belt has left him with a form of super leukemia. He is dying. In the guise of mind control, Sasquatch helps construct a device to transmit him back to the Skrull throne world. The Super Skrull is hit with another attack from his disease. Sasquatch forces the Skrull into the device, prematurely activates it, scattering his enemy's atoms into the ether. If he was ever to reintegrate himself, he would die immediately from the radiation poisoning. Walter figures this is as good as revenge for the murder of his colleagues, but doesn't like the more monstrous side of himself he's discovered. He returns to his home in Vancouver. Walter is surprised to be met by Aurora, who only wants to be with him after parting ways with her brother. Walter wonders now how this news will hit the rest of the team. The end. All right, our backup story, which is our story of North Star, is called Family Ties. After Jean, I cannot get this name right. Is it Bobier. After Jean Bobier joins Department H, Heather Hudson notices how much she resembles skiing champion Jean-Paul Martin, and a little bit of digging reveals that they are long-lost twins. After the death of their parents, the Martins could only afford to adopt one of them and arranged for the school to look after Jean Marie. When the Martins died in turn, the connection between the siblings was lost. Until now. Jean-Paul is brought into Ottawa, where he hears the news and immediately takes to using the Bobier name. He meets with James Hudson, who reveals he knows about the champion's hidden power of flight and offers him a spot in department to put them to good use. Jean-Paul isn't interested at first, but changes his tune when he is introduced to his long-lost sister he never knew he had. The end.
I want to expand on that last page. He's not interested until he meets his sister, but I want to amplify that just a little bit. He says, it's fantastic. It's like looking in some strange, distorting mirror. Yep. Which is exactly what she has been doing in the last issue, looking in a mirror. And I especially like the cliffhanger at the end when they say, oh, nice to meet you. And they reach out to clasp hands. And then Burns says, we'll spare you the blinding flash. It's like, oh, good.
I didn't get that. I forgot about that. They would happen, wouldn't it?
Mm. Well, they've done that arc light once or twice before. I can't recall if that was in the X-Men, but it's like,
but they did it.
I liked it. I thought it was a little cheeky of him, but it's like he had me. I was enjoying every issue and every little misdirection, red herring, what have you. Burns says that he does not like writing detective stories, that he really doesn't like to write Batman, because Batman is supposed to be a detective in a detective story. And in order to write a detective story, you have to know where it's going. And then you have to sprinkle the clues, but not be too obvious to the reader. This is a detective story, or at least last issue was. And I thought it was really well done. And so every time he does a detective story, I think it's really well done. And it's like, why doesn't he do more of this? But
he does it a lot.
He does not like them.
Yeah. He likes does it very well. He does a lot of the hiding out on the hiding clues and revealing and not letting you know right away what's going on. But
yeah, I think what he was getting at really was with regard to doing Batman on a regular basis.
Right.
he would have to come up with these clever stories, one after another after another. Mm-hmm. And maybe he thought, I might not be able to do that, you know, time after time after time. Every so often, he probably can give us a sort of detective style story, but to do it month after month after month with the same character, thought that's going to be a bit tough if you don't feel confident about it. Yeah.
Well, I also think it's interesting that when Hudson's talking to Northstar and he kind of basically reveals that, I know you can fly, he calls him a kind of a second-rate skier. In other words, you weren't that great of a skier until you developed your powers, and then that's when you became a champion.
Yeah, it's your powers that did it.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, that picture at the top of the following page where he's skiing, his body looks a bit weird to me on that skiing picture.
Well, he's have
you skied?
No.
Are you a skier?
No. What? No.
I don't anymore, but I bought it, you know. It's like he's a speedster. He's like Pietro. He's like Quicksilver.
Yeah.
That, you know, he's
going really fast, with his powers, yeah.
But I agree, the positioning is not looking terribly athletic, but the next panel down, he looks quite normal.
Yeah, that looks, but yeah, it looks like almost the top half of his body on the action picture, it's too big. He looks more like a weightlifter.
Right, that would be my quibble, that he doesn't look lean.
Looks
as he
too
would.
Chunky, yeah.
Yeah,
but better, yeah. When he's got the trophy on the next panel, yeah, that's more like a skier's physique, yeah.
Well, going to the third panel, I believe this is Hudson in the voiceover. He says, you had it all, money, fame, women.
Women.
And you see the women gathered around him as he's signing it. And then Hudson immediately in panel four says, although the women don't seem to have interested you over much, there's another clue.
Again, Byrne is laying these little breadcrumbs.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that may be because, in that case, maybe because he couldn't outly say he's gay. Maybe they wouldn't let him say that because it's for the comic code. But he's going to give you enough clues that a sharp reader could pick up on that. Because we've seen women, I think for the first time, when he comes to visit Aurora at school, all the girls are just falling all over him.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, you know, in an earlier episode, I was trying to recall if it was in a letters page that Byrne had said that his female fans and readers caught the overtures faster or very easily as opposed to his male readers. I've been thinking about that, and if nobody else remembers that, then I heard him make that comment at the Mid-Ohio Con at a live convention when he was addressing, I don't know if it was the crowd or the panel, but he was the guest of honor. And I've seen him once or twice there and got to know him. Let me rephrase that. I saw his public act at that con and I learned. Tim, edit this out. I saw him at the con and saw his public persona and enjoyed meeting him. That's all I mean to say.
Still on that page, you know, that last panel, and I think this is probably just a colouring problem on the original, but on that last panel where we've got a side shot of John Paul, is there a mark on his nose on the copy that you're looking at, whatever it might be?
How do you mean a mark?
It looks like a plaster across the top of his nose.
What's a plaster? A Band-Aid?
A Band-Aid. Yeah.
Nothing there. Tree that I'm looking at.
Right, okay. I've got the original comic, and it looks like he's got like a light blue plaster across the top of his nose. It must be a colouring.
Colouring mistake.
Yeah.
You mean where he says, the man you describe would be interested in joining this silly little club of yours?
Yes. Yeah, that picture. Yeah.
It's not there, not in this tree.
Okay. Yeah, it's just this one then. It's got some kind of smudge of another color on, and it just looks like, yeah, a band-aid across the top part of his nose.
Interesting. Yeah. So we do assume that this is, I don't know, sometime after that Wolverine has brought Aurora to Hudson. They've been introduced and she decided to join the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we to assume that her Jean Marie personality has not, I mean, I'm assuming she's not calling herself Aurora now. I don't know what she calls herself. That personality has not come back. This is obviously the Aurora that we see.
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know what point does she, because at one point she goes back to teaching under that personality. So I don't know what happens, or they don't even address it. You think that's the first thing he would do. He would know that when she's got that, she's got two different personalities, or the maybe Jean Paul would, I guess he doesn't discover it yet. He doesn't know now. So.
I don't know, Lucky Walter at the end of that story, we got Aurora waiting for him when he gets back home.
Yeah, seems like this is going to be a happy ending, doesn't it? Little do we know. He's laid a couple of seeds in here, although we don't recognize them yet. When he talks about how much of a beast he is because of the pain that he's in, because he transformed. So
again, between more that
and Aurora and some of the others, I didn't think he had an agenda, but in hindsight, boy, does he have this series all laid out, including the tie-ins to the FF.
Yeah, he has definitely thought. And he brings, I think this is why these two issues are a favorite of mine, because I love, one, I like the Super Scroll, and I love the way Byrne draws the Super Scroll. This is a great job of combining the fluidity of these powers that he's got the thing's hands, but they're on fire and he's stretching, and he's not just switching from one power to the next. He's combining them all and using them. And that splash page is gorgeous, where he's all in silhouette except for a kind of outline of the thing's hands, and it's all red, and he's punching it. He's chasing Walter, because Walter is, as you said, in the explosion, he broke his arm. He's afraid to turn into Sasquatch because he's not sure what that'll do if he's got a broken arm and he starts metamorphizing, if anything worse will happen, until he kind of basically he's either chooses to, or the stress the stress has caused him to, after he gets kind of buried, after he's fallen down the hill and buried, and then he erupts and grabs the and I can't tell when he grabs the Super Scroll by the legs and he's screaming. I can't tell if he's screaming because it's burning his hands, or he's just in his beast mode and he grabs.
I took it as his beast mode.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about his hands burning.
Yeah.
Good point though.
Because the scroll makes a comment about, he has a vague memory of Sasquatch, of when he beamed down, and he says he instinctively took the form of the thing, so he knew he'd be protected. He took a form of somebody wouldn't think him as being a villain.
Yeah.
That's why he looked like Ben Grimm.
And it would protect him more. Yeah. Something else I noticed when I looked at this, just going through it, going back to page 3 with the part with Mac in New York.
Yes.
The last panel on page 3. Did you notice the light? There's like a little rocket thing following him. Did you see that?
Yeah.
No, I'd overlooked it, but you're right. It's there.
It's like a spy.
Yes.
Camera stroke rocket, little rock following him. That's obviously is it Jerry Jackson and
per issue. Yeah, his plot, basically
his
11
plot
and 12.
To capture. Yeah, yep. Yeah. That's coming up, but there's the first sign that something's not. Yeah, something is afoot, as they would say. He's being followed by that little, what would you call it?
Like a little drone. It's like a drone or something.
Yeah, it's like a spy drone, yeah.
Well, you know, the page before it, we've glossed over this, but there's a cameo by Steve Rogers and Bernie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this implying that they were all living in the same building?
They would have been, but Mac never...
They never really move
that,
in,
room. No, he never gets there. They would have been, otherwise,
That's an interesting loose end. I'd love to see Byrne
another
come back
connection
and spin
to,
a little tale about there.
Yeah, another connection to the Captain America.
Yep.
But he did, yeah.
Well, and on the page with the drone, long before Byrne took on Superman, but he makes a little Superman reference where he says, I don't have a convenient cape pouch into which I can compress my civvies. So, you know, that's Superman. But it's funny because he does say...
Because he says, I really feel like a superhero changing clothes in a New York alleyway. Yeah.
Yep. he goes, I may have the opportunity to ask Spider-Man what he does, you know, about... Because he just says, he throws him in a duffel bag and takes off.
But the pose that he's got there in the first panel is kind
of
Superman-ish.
It's a shirt ripping.
Yeah.
And on the bottom of that page and on the front page where we see New York, this is where Byrne has started using photo references. Of the New York and of the bridge and the New York skyline. He's obviously taking that and he's put a filter over it or something.
And then the brownstone,
The brownstone, I can't tell. That could be. It looks like it could be. Could be. I can't tell. And then when you see a close up of the drone, that looks like he's flying over a highway or a overpass or something.
That could be is it New Jersey Turnpike or whatever they call it.
Could be. That's the, I don't know if that's the Brooklyn Bridge. He calls it the Brooklyn Bridge, yeah.
It is the Brooklyn
of
Bridge.
Of course, yeah, yeah. There's bridge on the panel above, yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I just noticed that for the first time, that the thing that's following him is actually in the bottom of the panel before. Yeah. Yep.
You see tiny.
Oh, you're right.
Just it looks like a hair on the page. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. I'd not noticed that till just now, yeah.
Well, and to your point, Kirk, about foreshadowing, in that same panel he says, who knows, before this year ends, I might find myself fighting beside Thor, Captain America, or Iron Man. And, of course, we all know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Which just makes the what happens more of a shock.
I want to direct your attention to page 15 as the Skrull is beamed out, so to speak. I love the artwork in that last panel because we've got a clack just before and then the elongated, I think this is Byrne's attempt to demonstrate the transporter, the Star Trek transporter effect.
Exactly.
But the stretched body and the stretched word no. I just think it's really effective. It works so well, although it's pretty obvious that I don't want to say that. He has to tie up the story somehow. This is how he gets rid of the Skrull. I would think that the Skrull would have been able to have flamed on and flown right off from that panel, except for the purposes of the story. He gets beamed out, and I love it. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Well, since you brought that up, Kirk, I'm going to give a little rundown of this is the history kind of the Super Skrull, and we've covered most of this, starting in Marvel Team Up 62, where he fights Miss Marvel and Spider-Man. And in the end of that, they have a crystal. I can't remember what the crystal is called. It's a crystal that they throw at him, and then they flood him with power, and because of that, his body kind of becomes like a space warp, and he's gone. He is, you know, they don't know where he went. And then that's where we assume that in this these issues, they have, he's been, okay, he's been taken up to the radiation belt. In this issue, they grab him, bring him down, and then at the end, Sasquatch sends him back to the radiation belt. And that's the last we see of that. Well, then in Silver Surfer, which was probably the late 80s, it's
88.
Silver Surfer Annual.
Annual One, isn't it?
I think Annual One.
It's part of the High Evolutionary.
Or War. No, it's actually what it says here. It's Silver Surfer number 14, which was Stevie Englehart was writing that with Joe Stanton and Joe Rubinstein.
But there is something about the Skrull in
later in they in that in the one annual. The Skrull shoots a beam into the air at the end. Then it goes into the annual, and that's 1988. And the Skrull reforms, and he sees the Silver Surfer. And he says, oh, the antimatter in the radiation belt cured my cancer.
Yeah.
He's fine. And he explains that he was, you know, he kind of references the Alpha Flight issues. And then he fights the Skrull. I don't know what happens after that. So that's supposedly how he has come back. Well, in Namor 17, Kurt, Namor didn't like, or Byrne didn't like what they had done. They didn't like the way they cured his cancer. So when the Super Skrull is pretending to be Iron Fist in those issues, it turns out that Master Khan had rescued the Silver Surfer, or excuse me, rescued the Super Skrull, cured his cancer, and then he helped Master Khan with all the plots and stuff that he was doing in the Namor book. Mm. And then at the end, he double-crossed him and sent him back to the radiation belt to then get released in Silver Surfer Annual number 1. That's how Byrne retconned how his cancer was cured.
Okay.
Like I said, it's convoluted.
Yeah.
But, you know, basically it's just like he reset everything.
But he allegedly, the Super Skrull contracted cancer because he'd been in the Van Allen radiation belts for so long?
Exactly.
But then when he was returned to it, allegedly the radiation belt cured him.
That was how Steve Englehart decided that he was cured.
Right.
Byrne didn't like that, so he decided that it was Master Khan that cured him and then sent him back to the radiation belt, which I would think he would just get cancer again. But... then we get last page, we get another kind of photo reference of Vancouver skyline at night. And then your point, I think you brought up, Kirk, that he's hinting at that. He said, you know, I just discovered a side of Sasquatch I'm not altogether crazy about. He said Bruce Banner lived in the shadow of his monstrous alter ego until he found a way to tame the Hulk. I hope this hasn't been a warning that my life might run in the other direction if it should ever lose control of Sasquatch again. So, again, he's those breadcrumbs
out. Foreshadowing?
Yep.
Something else that occurred to me, I want to go back to the last issue, 9 here, when he has decided to reveal himself to the other scientists, so much for my secret identity.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the top of page 7 when the good doctor in the infirmary is being killed, and he's in apparently the cafeteria or something. Somebody just recently excerpted this and put it online, and I didn't catch it, but it's a discussion over coffee between Walter and Meg, where he says, yeah, my extreme activity leaves me exhausted, blah, blah, blah. And she says, but everything enlarges proportionally. Heart, lungs, even your GI track, and look, she's playing footsie with him.
Yeah.
Under the table. So,
and he's got kind of a grin on his face.
Yeah, they're, you know, she's flirting, but I think this was a subtle way to say there's more to this relationship, or there's going to be more to this relationship, making her death then more bittersweet in just four pages or so.
And further, I think that's why, I think that's why she's the one that survives for a few minutes to talk to him and die.
I've got to tell you, though, when I first read this, I thought with the scarred face, I really thought this was going to tie into Nemesis. I thought we weren't done with this character. I was totally wrong. But, you know, every time she's seen, it always shows that left side of her face. And then that's the one that gets really burned and really scarred. So, I'm never mind me. I'm tangenting.
No. I think he does. He spends a lot of screen time with her. And it wouldn't surprise me if another writer could say, well, she survived. She didn't die. He thought she died. And because of the Super Scrolls antimatter blast or something, she got superpowers, but she's scarred. So now she's bitter. Something like that.
Hey, you'd be a good comic writer, Tim.
Right? You always dig back and get that. But I think it's also because he did have a kind of a flirty connection with her. And now, and he mentions at one point she's blind. And he does have her eyes are drawn like she's blind. And he says, he'll get her to a. And that just also spurs him on.
It just seems like there was going to be more there, or that there should be more, because he goes to great lengths to describe, one, that she's flirty, that she's interested in him, and that now that she's the blast has occurred, to go additionally to the fact that she's blind. It's like why did he go that far? Why did he establish that she must be blind? What does that add?
I think it's just him, Burns, playing with the science of what this, isn't. Didn't Johnny have a Nova Blast? Isn't that him when he does the?
Yeah.
He does his. He releases all his energy at once, and it also I think it cements that he knows who this is. So that's when he, she dies, and he's enraged, and he's yelling at the. Calling out for the scroll and the scroll. And it's a great scene where the scroll kind of just slowly walks out of the fire. You see his silhouette. And then in the bottom panel, his arms have changed into thing arms. In the silhouette.
Right.
The shadow. So he's already getting ready for battle.
Right.
And then that's a great splash page at the end where he's rearing up and he's going to.
And exhibiting three of the four FF's powers all at once.
And
did we talk about why he should not have the force field, Sue's force field, before? Have we talked about that before?
Because she didn't have it originally?
That's right. When he was created, she did not have that power. And so there would have been no reason for the Skrulls to have given him that power if he was supposed to mimic the powers of the FF. There's no way he should have it.
But it's like... Since they're broadcasting the power, they're just doing an update. They're doing an update in his coding, and then he gets the. Because he mentions either 9 or 10, he says, I have. His powers are superior to the FF. He can stretch further than Reed. He's hotter than Johnny. He's stronger than the thing. And then, of course, he has his. What's he call his. Atomic blast, my antimatter blast.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. I have never seen or heard of that one before.
I don't know either, but he says one power that even the monster cannot hope to survive, my antimatter blast.
Well, he's thinking to himself.
Right.
Except that last comment, my antimatter blast, he says out loud. I don't know where that came from, because I don't believe he's ever demonstrated that before.
I thought his blood. Well, I think before it's just always been you assumed it was Johnny's fire blast.
Right.
And of course he's got the super hypnosis.
Yeah, that was established way back. That I'd buy that.
And I think Sasquatch at one point he mentions that he speculates that the scroll has been exposed to the power beam for so long that now the powers are permanent.
Yeah.
And I think also he says that the beam was the beam from the throne world was fired at the crystal. Then he became simply another random pulse in the arcane mechanism. Somehow he triggered the beam still homed in on Earth. But isn't at this point, he wants to get back to the throne world. Hasn't Galactus eaten the throne world by this time?
Yes, yeah. I believe they state that on 18.
They referred to 13.
Yeah.
Right in the middle.
So I don't know where he thinks he's going, or else, I guess Sasquatch doesn't care. He's just kind of playing along. Because he thinks, even if it did work, I don't know where he would beam. He would beam into open space, I guess.
Well, it's a great story. I like it.
It is. It's a lot of action.
Despite what we can pick apart, I just really like it. I like the Super Skrull. I like how he's depicted. I like the fact that he's scheming, that he's underhanded. I didn't catch when I first read this all the clues of why the open window was significant and why the wall was busted one direction rather than the other, and the same with the fence. It's like, you know, it didn't all register for me of why these things didn't add up. It wasn't a problem for me, and when they did the reveal at the end, I didn't have any problem with that because I had just immediately bought it. Although there was a part of me that wondered if the figure that Sasquatch found in the thing that turns out to be Meg, who dies in his arms, it occurred to me that that might have been the thing from another world also. That, you know, everything becomes suspect when you realize you've got a shapeshifter.
Yep. Which is exactly what you've got here. You've got for all his powers, he is a shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Anything else we want to cover here?
Well, something I want to bring up real quick. When he's, this is a Nigel's copy, but when he is talking to the major, or is he the colonel? Colonel McMurdo. That is, I think, the major U.S. base on the Antarctic. McMurdo is the name of a U.S. Army base. So that's got to be him named for that.
And that's got to be the biggest handlebar mustache that I have seen in years.
That is a prominent mustache.
And the, just want to add that the cover to issue 10 is fabulous.
It is.
Just not mentioned that. Yeah.
No,
talk about a tight shot. Wow.
Close up of Sasquatch. I love the fire in his eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. His flames in his red eyes.
That's really going to make. Yeah. That's a buy me or else. Yeah. That's a great.
Well, cool. You guys got anything else on this one? I think we've done a pretty good job of covering it. I do know that the next issue is the final of the origin backup stories. It's origin of Sasquatch.
Good reason.
Yeah.
Well, and then let's pull back the curtain for a moment for our lovely listeners here. We've been trying to do these in units of two because it made sense. The last two issues, these two issues, the next two issues are more than just two issues because there's a double-sized 12, although we don't know it at this point that it's coming. We can discuss this off mic, but is it your intent to do the next two issues together?
I would like to do them separately because I think 12 needs a lot of attention. It's a big issue, and there's a lot of stuff going on. So
okay,
we could do 11 as a standalone, even though it ties right into 12, then didn't focus on 12 all by itself. We'll see what the rest of the guys want to do.
Okay, I'm looking at how many pages in the story and then how many pages in the backup. I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree. Oh, cool. Let's settle this later on when we talk to the other guys.
Yeah, we'll talk to them.
Okay.
All right. Well, if
any final comments?
Great issue. It's just it's been a favorite of mine. I love because it kind of is very reminiscent of The Thing, and that's one of my favorite movies. I love the Super Skrull. I like Sasquatch. He's probably one of my favorite on the team. And it's just those two, and we get a little more, it's a mystery, and we get the Super Skrull, and it's just a cracking good two issues that goes by pretty quick, given there was a lot going on.
Now, Tim, you've done this review, these two issues before with Brian, is that correct?
Just issue 10. We did one.
Oh, really?
We didn't do both of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you'd done both of them.
No, that's okay. When we were doing one issue per show.
Right. It'll be very interesting to for those who want more information, if you still have that show available in the archives, to go back to see if your opinions have changed or if you spotted the same things.
Yeah, I will. I'll reissue it probably before this issue. So if you're listening to this, I will have already issued 10 as a kind of a teaser, and then you can hear this too. That way you can hear Brian's thoughts on it.
Good, good. Yep. Mm. Okay. Nigel, anything else for us?
No, not really. As Tim said, it's a good story. It was one of my favorites as well. Good story. I like Super Skrull, drawn by John Byrne. And I liked both these characters, Sasquatch and Aurora. And for me at this stage, everything seemed to be going great. I was enjoying it.
I know. It's kind of, although, it feels like it's just kind of hitting its stride.
Yeah, but
it does.
But for me that's about to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. About to change for everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to spoil a 40-year-old comic book or a story that is so well known for its plot reveals, but boy, lovely listener, if you have not been reading the whole series or not been following along, don't miss next episode, because boy, do we have a left turn coming in this series. You have to go for the ride. So that's about all I'll say right now.
And the next issue, 11, introduces one of my second favorite characters, Box.
Yep. I can't wait for Madison Jeffries, though.
I like him, too. I don't think he gets enough screen time.
Well, he kept him in reserve. He didn't. If you go back and look at the original profiles of who's in what teams, the silhouettes, I never did this prior to this review. But if you look, it's all there.
He's there.
All the characters are there. And it's a matter of when he brings the chess players on board, that he had the whole arc of this all worked out. This is not being invented out of whole cloth, one issue at a time, as I thought they used to do when I was a kid. Being very young and thinking that, oh, what a cliffhanger, they must not know how they're going to resolve this story. I didn't understand how stories were written because I was getting them in a serial, fashion. 1 month, have to wait 4 weeks. Next issue comes out, can't wait for the next month. 4 weeks have to go by. I thought they were writing them just as they were being released, never dreaming that authors had entire arcs in mind, that they already knew how the story was going to end before they ever introduced a multi-part story. So my compliments to Byrne that he has, as far as I can tell, he had the whole 30-issue run planned before he ever started, or maybe he refined it. But he had said that he had 2 years' worth of stories, but then when they actually got into print, he discovered that he had a couple of more that things didn't always compress just into two years. He had a little bit more, and so it went as long as it did. And I thought that was a very telling comment, that it's like sometimes the author gets caught up in it and he's got stuff to say. And so he spills over and he makes it work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Stephen King has often said, and I think this happens probably, if this may be typical of most authors, that he will write a character and you think, okay, you have complete control. But as he writes a book, sometimes the characters will take on they'll start doing things. Obviously he's writing it, but the characters will start taking a life of their own. And they'll start doing things that seem to be like out of his control because they're so...
Well, that he wasn't expecting, that the story is veering one direction or another. Yeah.
So I'm sure if you've got an outline and Burns following that outline, as you start to write it and draw it, things will change. And you're like, oh, I've got another idea. I'll do this or that. So I'm sure it's not set in stone as to what he's doing. But.
Well, the most famous one that I can think of, and again, I may be repeating myself, is in the X-Men Elsewhere story, where he was developing plot lines and Colossus had some sort of pain or fear of being injured, and Byrne comes to a point where he's like, where was I going with this? And so he just erases it and said, never mind. It's like, holy smokes, how can you do that? That's the one that comes to mind.
Yeah. Okay, well, if there are no... I'll wrap it up. Let's. I want to thank both my hosts coming on, Nigel and Kirk. Always a pleasure to talk to you guys. If anybody listening would like to get a hold of us, Facebook is probably the best way to leave a comment and to see how we post shows and post comments and teasers. But you can also write us at gottagetburned@gmail.com if you actually want to write us an actual email. Or to make Brian's heart sing, you can send us a five-star review on iTunes. We don't get many of those. It does help people find the show. So I would like to, again, thank Kirk for coming on.
My pleasure. It's been a fun one.
And thank you, Nigel.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. And I'd like to thank everybody else for listening this long, and we will see you in the future.
Are you mad? I see no one.
But that is my fourth power, my liege.
Good day.
Good day.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the Tutu Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.